as part of an exercise this morning, probably at the beginning of the class and the end of the class, there's two things I want to try to do. First off, I want you to think about characters in the Bible that you consider to have had a good name. And if you can think about that for just a moment, the next thing we're going to want to think about and as we get toward the end of the class is what characteristics of those individuals established their good name. It's always good as we go through the lesson to look at the characteristics that the passages are talking about, but then actually apply them to individuals and see how they made that impression on us. So, my favorite, you know, aside from Christ, probably my favorite inspirational character is Joseph. Now, Abraham. And we could, there's key ones through here, Samuel, Daniel, you know, different ones like that, but thinking about what their key characteristics are that really set them apart, that gave them a good name, would be key as we think through this lesson. So kind of keep that in the back of your mind as we're working our way through, and let's be prepared to some degree to talk about those characteristics of those individuals. Bear with me. How to have a good name. In Proverbs 22:1, a good name is to be chosen rather than great riches. Favor is better than silver and gold. When we look at individuals that we respect or that we consider to have a good name, they cover the spectrum of people from very different demographics. Some may be of meager means. Some may be wealthy to do. Some may be politically aligned in one way or the other. There's just different demographics that give people their characteristics. Sorry, I walked off and left my notes at the house. So when we look at what makes a good name is greater than riches, there is value associated with a good name. And in and of that, we look at individuals that we respect from day in and day out or in our lives past, there's things about them that created a good name, that people respected about them, that left an indelible impression upon those around them. Certainly, in the civil rights movement, Martin Luther King had an indelible impact upon society. Abraham Lincoln, and what he did in unifying people throughout the Civil War and accomplishing that. We look at history, we can see individuals that because of their character and because of their name, people respected them. When we look at individuals spiritually that we know that we respect, no doubt there are individuals in our lives that have had great influence upon us spiritually. Much like Bible characters, as we indicated, have that influence. Whether it be an individual that taught us the truth, or an individual that, because of their behavior, gave us pause to think on a regular basis. So, you know, all of those come to play. I can think of individuals that had influence on my lifetime. Lucy Glass, teacher, teaching elementary classes as my first grade teacher, but also teaching as a Bible class teacher here. And no, I did not. Well, that's true. And people can be a barometer for us when we look in the audience. I know when I'm delivering a lesson, I look for those nods to see, okay, have I said the wrong thing, or have I made the wrong point, or... And it helps, no doubt. And it's, we look to those people of character that have that influence on us. A good name is valuable. We protect our valuables, do we not? You know, we have insurance on our home. We have, you know, we're required by law to protect our cars, but to some degree to keep from an accident hurting somebody else. But in general, we try to protect the things that we value. We try to protect our families. It evokes admiration, a good name does. It evokes respect. It exemplifies trustworthiness. I don't think you'll find anybody that is known to have a good name that is untrustworthy. What do we say about God? If we look at from the standpoint of characteristics of God, God is good. He exemplifies all of these characteristics. When we're told to be God-like or to be Christ-like, these are some of the aspects when we look to aspire to mimic their example and how they behave, how they treat others, their character, it produces a good name for us as we follow their examples. How do we maintain a good name? Probably the first and foremost thing is abstaining from vices. And we look at what the Bible has to say about vices to avoid, one of which is here, avoiding strong drink or addiction to strong drink. Proverbs 20 and 1, wine is a mocker, strong drink a brawler, and whoever is led astray is not wise. Okay, we're not going to debate today. We're not going to talk through, you know, alcoholic content of prior generations and those things, but this passage simply in and of itself, the alcoholic content in a drink causes one to be mocked. It doesn't say light wine, it doesn't say heavy wine, it doesn't say strong drink, it doesn't say whatever, it just says wine is a mocker. Alcohol teases and taunts. Its ability to relax the nervous system and to provide some medicinal benefits lures one to think that all things are okay in moderation. And because it can be used for these things over here, it's okay in moderation. You don't become an alcoholic by never taking a drink. You become one by taking your first drink. You don't become addicted to drugs by never taking that first toke on a joint and smoking marijuana. You don't get addicted to cigarettes by never taking the first one. And all of those things, in and of themselves, society represents, it's okay in moderation. It's cool. The fad today is vaping. In and of itself, it is a drug. The first warning on vaping is, this is a drug. Nicotine is a drug and causes addiction. Anything here that impedes our ability to think clearly fits in this category. You don't become an alcoholic. You don't become an addict by never taking the first step. Anytime we try to do something for the first time and the experience doesn't go badly, we are more likely to try it again. Personal example, storyline from my dad. He and his uncle decided it would be really a great idea. They found a cigar and they'd go off and try and smoke it. My grandfather found them with it. He said, okay, smoke the whole thing now. Both of them ended up puking their guts out. They never had an interest in going back smoking another cigar. He knew the lesson of this by forcing the idea to go badly and leave the bad taste. How many times we try something that's supposed to be good for us, broccoli, and don't like it, do we ever go back and eat it again? But it's those things that if it doesn't go badly, we are tempted to try it again. That's the lure of sin in and of itself. I think we can see that all the way back to the Garden of Eden. The warning that was given to Adam and Eve is that the fruit of the tree of knowledge of good and evil would cause death. And when they took that first sample of that fruit, did it cause immediate death? No, they thought it was okay. But ultimately it separated them from God. Addiction to strong drink in 1 Peter 4 and 3, banquetings are linked into this. Drinking parties are condemned. A place where you're going to be presented and exposed to it. And that's a tough one in today's business world. you're expected to go to an outing or an event that the company is sponsoring, and it's no doubt the company itself may be hosting it and serving alcohol. It's very smart in those environments to not have a drink the entire night. Because somebody's going to say, well, I saw you there with, even if you're walking around with a glass of ice water, well, did you have a glass of vodka? Or what did you have? Had that experience when I was in college. Went to a gathering, and the first thing they said, well, you were walking around with Coke and rum. Well, no, I had a soft drink. It's the appearance there that gave people the wrong idea because of the environment. We have to be careful how we act when we go to those environments. One will have an impossible task of teaching someone how to be saved with a Bible in one hand and a beer can or wine glass in the other. It destroys one's influence for good. How are you going to tell them something's wrong if you're sitting there participating in it? Romans 14 and 13. Therefore, let us not pass judgment on one another any longer, but rather decide never to put a stumbling block or a hindrance in the way of a brother. Our influence, and we're talking about today, our name, is critical as it relates to being able to influence someone. 1 Corinthians 8 and 9. But take care that this right of yours does not somehow become a stumbling block to the weak. And there that passage was relating to the idea of eating meats that had been offered to idols. In and of itself, the meat itself was nothing wrong, but the influence that it created and the idea that created for a weaker brother was a problem. An individual's name could be pulled into question as a result of that. And not because of their own doing, because of a right of their own, but because how someone else perceived. Disobedience to civil law, abstaining from vices. In Proverbs 20 and 2, the terror of a king is like the growling of a lion. Whoever provokes him to anger forfeits his life. There is an aspect of that that's commanded that civil authorities have rule. When we break that rule, we're going to be subject to it. And if we do so, we diminish our good name. What will the name Bernie Madoff ever be associated with? He's a thief. Largest Ponzi scheme to date in modern society, in which he built thousands of people out of millions and millions of dollars. His name is associated with sin. Prior to that, he was this brilliant whiz kid. In Romans 13 and 2 through 5, therefore, whoever resists the authorities resists what God has appointed. We've mentioned earlier that you can't teach someone what's right if you're doing something that's contrary to it. If you're doing something contrary to the civil law here, the authorities have the responsibility to take care of it. And as a result, your name, our name, is going to be diminished. Rejection of work ethic. We had an entire lesson as we talked through the book of Proverbs on the idea of the sluggard. And here, as it relates to what an individual was, as it's related to their work ethic, and this ties together with one's name and what they're thought of because of their work ethic. We refer to types of people sometimes. You've heard the expression, that person is a type A personality. They're just full of energy, they're constantly going about it, and they never slow down. And then there's, the Bible uses the term sluggard. First, rejection of the work ethic is condemned in the Bible. In Proverbs 20 and 4, the sluggard does not plow in autumn, he will seek at harvest and have nothing. Now, a general statement there is made in Proverbs that it's just, this is what the fact is. But does this entire passage here evoke something that you're going to be proud of? Because in the day in which you don't have anything to eat, you're going to be begging from the people that are around you to help you have food. You see that in the story of the prodigal son, where he finally comes to a realization after having totally debased himself that he'd be better off going back to his father and asking for mercy. Proverbs 12 and 11, whoever works his land will have plenty of bread, but he who follows worthless pursuits lacks sense. Now, this passage, very bluntly, do we think someone that is of a good name lacks sense? And generally, we equate somebody that's a good name with being smart, being wise, prudent in how they go about doing their activities. Their behavior is consistent with productivity. Someone that is empathetic to their fellow brother. Someone that is sympathetic and willing to show mercy in appropriate times. There's a lot of different characters that fit with having a good name. But here, this point is made in this passage here that someone that behaves this way lacks sense. If we find ourselves on social media at the expense of other tasks, we lack sense. Now, I made a jump here from the idea of planting and not having working one's land. Well, we don't all farm today, do we? But we all have tasks that we're responsible for. If we avoid things at the expense of participating in any number of other activities, I chose social media here because it's so prevalent in today's society. We effectively lack sense, like the farmer that would not work his land. If we find ourselves watching the latest videos on our laptops and iPads and whatever else, or TV shows at the expense of taking care of, if we cannot put your computer or your tablet or your phone down, you are not in control. You have relinquished control to the advertisers and the marketers selling subtle content. The whole reason that all the videos are on the internet, sell you a marketing plan, sell you an idea about a product. All those little banners that are running in the background is to get you to think about that product and go buy it. You're being controlled by outside influences. I'm being controlled by outside influences when I participate in that. What influences do we want to be controlled by if we want to have a good name? Godly influences, God's influences. Rejection of the work ethic continues throughout the Bible. It talks about in 1 Timothy 5:13 through 14. Besides that, they learn to be idlers. And this is talking about in the case where a young widow is being considered to be taken into the care of the church from a benevolent standpoint. And it makes here that besides that, they learn to be idlers, going about from house to house, and not only idlers, but also gossips and busybodies. Do we generally consider an individual that's a gossip and a busybody to have a good name? We don't. Okay? So if we want to maintain a good name, we don't want to be doing these activities. So the passage continues on saying what they should not. So I would have younger widows marry, bear children, manage their households, and give the adversary no occasion for slander. What activities here was he admonishing these people, these individuals, to focus on? She maintained her household, she took care of her children, and she provided for those that were in her care and responsibility. That's the focus and the content intended. And I'm going to cross the gender lines. That's the focus and importance of the men in the family as well as taking care of the household, taking care of the wives, taking care of the children, so that they all grow up spiritually intact to praise their parents. That's true. When it talks about here in this passage, the individuals that were raised on a farm, particularly in the past when it was hand labor and it was hard and it was required to basically work from sunup to sundown, you didn't have time for a lot of idle behavior. Now, that's not to say that people in that day and age, and even today, that work from continuing working nonstop, don't have enjoyment in living with their family and those things. All of that goes hand in hand. It's a matter of finding ways to engage with them that keep them engaged. In Proverbs 20 and 13, love not sleep, lest thou come to poverty. Open your eyes, and you will have plenty of bread. Here it's talking about not avoiding these things. When we say rejection of the work ethic here, it's making the point that you're being busy all the time. You're not giving opportunity to the devil to sneak in and steal the idle time for an unusual purpose. Dishonesty in business. We've talked about this previously in some of our lessons where it talks about equal balances, business with them because of that. And we say that basically about whether it's business or whether it's dishonesty in how we treat one another. If you tell me you're going to do something and you don't do it, that goes to your trustworthiness and honest behavior, then I don't have cause to continue to ask you to do things for me. Do I? No. So dishonesty in business. In Proverbs 20 and 7, the righteous who walks in his integrity are blessed are his children after him. So righteousness there doesn't necessarily mean the idea of business, but a righteous man won't take advantage of his fellow man. Proverbs 20 and 10 specifically talks about dishonesty in business. Unequal weights and unequal measures are both alike an abomination to the Lord. Would we equate being an abomination to the Lord having a good name? Absolutely not. Proverbs 20 and 11. When a child makes himself known by his acts, by whether his conduct is pure and upright. Granted, this is not business. But it goes to the idea of a businessman will be known by his acts. Just as we are known by our own acts in any way that we behave ourselves. And it affects our name. Proverbs 20 and 17. Bread gained by deceit is sweet to a man, but afterwards his mouth is full of gravel. Thief may think that he really has gotten an upper hand on somebody and relish that for a moment. But after he has been punished for his behavior, it comes with consequences, much as it's making the point here that his mouth is full of gravel. Abstaining from vices. We talked earlier in passage in 1 Timothy, participation in gossip, being a talebearer. Proverbs 20 and 19, whoever goes about slandering reveals secrets. Therefore, do not associate with a simple babbler. Certainly, when we're working with somebody and we can reveal to them in confidence something, how do we expect that to be maintained? Confidence. That's why in the case of in the business world, at the bottom of on a lot of presentations and taglines, it says proprietary information of this company. And do not be revealed unless otherwise authorized. Well, when we say I'm having a conversation with you about something and say I would appreciate it if you would keep this in confidence or keep this to yourself. You have a similar expectation that it's not going to be revealed. Be a way to talk to that individual. But in that instance, for the telling of tales, for the purpose of enjoyment of telling the tale alone, has a totally different meaning. Proverbs 11 and 13. Whoever goes about slandering reveals secrets, but he who is trustworthy in spirit keeps a thing covered. There are things that when somebody tells us in confidence, it is just best keep it that way. They may be seeking advice and looking for insight to a matter that they're not ready to reveal otherwise. And if it's leaked in advance, it does more harm than if it's leaked than if it's presented at the right time. We see industrial espionage where people are trying to find out and elicit information for an individual so that they can develop a preemptive product to beat the other guy to market. Timing is key in some cases. Abstaining from vices. Proverbs talks specifically about disrespecting one's parents. Disrespect of parents is not looked upon favorably in the Bible. Name an individual that comes to mind that showed disrespect to their parents in their behavior. Esau was the first one that was going to come to my mind. He was characterized as a rough individual. Of course, he was loved by his father because he could provide him with game and meat, but what did he do that was disrespectful, most disrespectful to his parents? He chose wives of the Canaanites. Okay? When we show disrespect for our parents, do other people pick up on that and perceive it? Absolutely. If I, as an older person now, were failing to take care of my parents, you would all notice that. And you would think a lot less of me for doing so. If I, as a young person in the audience, blatantly involved in activities that are unbecoming a Christian, it will reflect upon you for disrespecting parents who loved you and trained you and taught you better than that. Proverbs 20 and 20. If one curses his father or his mother, his lamp will be put out in utter darkness. God did not look favorably on disrespect of parents. What was one of the Ten Commandments? Proverbs 20 and 21. An inheritance gained hastily in the beginning will not be blessed in the end. Name the Bible character that fits this passage. Prodigal son. He asked for his inheritance before it was due him. And what did he do with it? He wasted it in riotous living. He showed disrespect to his parents in doing so. Did the father deny him his request? No, he didn't. It was his choice to be able to facilitate that. And it may have been that the father, in his wisdom at that point, felt like, we've talked about that as well, we made the point in one of our earlier lessons, but he did. The son thought he was much smarter than his father, that he was capable of going out and making his own way. Our behavior in the use of the blessings passed along by our parents shows whether we respect them or not. This doesn't necessarily imply that it's a we don't value it and use it in the right way. Vengeance against enemies as abstaining from vices. Now, Proverbs 20 and 22. Do not say, I will repay evil. Wait for the Lord and He will deliver you. And when the Bible talks about taking vengeance, do we have the same laws under the New Testament that were under the old law with respect to vengeance? No. We don't. We are not commanded to take eye for an eye, tooth for a tooth. We are given over to allowing the authorities that be to take care of civil punishment. And ultimately, in the end, God, meaning a judgment, final judgment, is not in our hands. Abstaining from vices, making rash vows, was considered to be one of the things that, here in the Proverbs, that diminished an individual's character. If I lash out and say, I'm going to do this and so on, and then I can't deliver on it, we say we have mud on our face, don't we? That's a common expression, more modern expression. It diminishes my name. It diminishes my character. If I can't follow through with the things that I vowed to do. Proverbs 20 and 25. It is a snare to say rashly, it is holy, and reflect only after making vows. The interesting part of this one, as I read through this passage, you know, it's learning something the hard way. It's always hindsight's 20/20. That's what this passage is saying. You know, when we look back after we've made a vow and we've tried to complete things, you know, we really realize what the lessons learned are and what actually can be accomplished. But if we had not acted rashly, we had not acted impetuously, we had not said something out of turn quickly, take the opposite of that. We had taken our time and thought through what we were going to respond and say, and in some cases not say it at that time. Oftentimes we're told in business to write an email and let it sit 24 hours before you send it. If it's something that's critical or it's something that's important. You know what? After that 24 hours, you may decide, I just don't need to send this. Oftentimes, if we thought about that in character with individuals that we're talking to, I've told people that ask me things. I said, my rash words spoken hastily are often not our best words. Summary. Good name is like an elaborate garden. Beautiful garden that's laid out. You know, it takes constant maintenance. You see a beautiful landscaped garden that's got different flowers and different plants that are nicely groomed and trimmed. It takes a lot of effort to keep it in place, keep it in shape. It takes intense efforts at key times, because certain plants, you can't cut them at the wrong time and have them survive. Key times to produce anything of value. When neglected, it becomes a tangled mess, looks, smells bad, and requires immense effort to overcome. If you don't cut the corn stalks down and get them out of, it is. A good name's like a beautiful garden. If you constantly maintain it in the right way, it'll stay. A good name differs in an important area from garden, though. It cannot be turned. If I've planted a garden and I've got a garden spot and it's gotten out of control, well, you know, I can take the tractor and I can turn the whole thing under and at least I've got a new starting position for the next season. But I can't do that with my name, because there's way too many people that see my name, know the character that and behavior that I have done, and cannot let go of that image of what's happened in the past to start with. Now, we as Christians have an avenue to be able to restore that. We can ask for forgiveness. And the Bible teaches that part of the act of forgiveness is putting it, blotting it out. God, if we truly repent and ask for forgiveness, God blots it out. Our fellow Christians have our heart oftentimes harder to forget things, but that's what the Bible teaches. But if we're unwilling to repent and ask for forgiveness, we're no different than this smelly garden every day, because we haven't tried to clear it off and we haven't tried to start anew. Thoughts and comments on what Proverbs and the rest of the Bible has to say about a good name. It's not a little white lie. It is ranked in with the worst of sins that an individual can participate in. So I asked you at the beginning of the class to think about Bible characters. We kind of mentioned some of them. We mentioned Joseph, we mentioned Daniel, we mentioned Samuel, we mentioned Abraham. What are some of the key character traits that they exhibited that gave them a good name? Abraham had a good name with God. He said, I know him. We have a similar passage with respect to Moses. You know, when they took God, the relationship between God and Moses. We didn't even mention him. If we go to Hebrews, many of these individuals are known for their good name because of their faith. Because their faith drove them to do things that were consistently aligned with God's. That's a full testament to that. So if we look at those characteristics for having a good name, we want to be mimicking these individuals in a way that we walk in faith daily. Thank you.